Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you again. Phil, unlike last week when we were coming off two losses, basically what was expected, Marquette now coming off a 1-1 week that almost, to some people anyway, feels like the end of the world.
Yes, welcome to the Eeyore edition of Scrambled Eggs.
I think we said that last week.
We did, and it's only getting worse.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the win over St. John's on Sunday, which was moved because of the weather event in the Northeast. Hope our Northeast alumni are able to dig themselves out of the snow there. And we'll talk about, of course, the loss to DePaul, which quite honestly still stings, in my opinion. But we'll get over that. We'll try to anyway. And then we'll just kind of, at the end of the show, we're going to talk about what's next for this team. Where did the team go from here after... overall, probably a disappointing week by most accounts. Phil, let's just touch briefly on the St. John's game. I really don't like to be one to crap on a win just because it was close, but boy, I was certainly nervous there today that Marquette could have been the first conference loss to DePaul and St. John's in the same week. I'm happy they escaped with a win, but boy, they gave me heartburn on Sunday.
Yeah, and it's kind of cliche to say, you know, something epitomizes the season, you know, in perspective. But I think that's rather appropriate with this St. John's game. Because at times, you know, Marquette went up 20 to start the first 6 minutes of the second half, managed to give that away. Then went back up by 12, managed to give that away, and then went back up by 11, and then managed to give us heart attacks and make it look a lot, you know, essentially let St. John's get within a single possession with less than a minute to go. So it was pretty well, reflective.
The turnovers were obviously the huge thing on Sunday. And just, I mean, they were really stunned by St. John's press in the second half, and were just, for the longest time, for what seemed like an hour, it was probably in the end maybe a minute or two, but what seemed like forever, it seemed like they just couldn't get out of the backcourt. They kept turning it over, getting trapped in the corner, just making bad decisions inbounding the ball after St. John's made baskets. And boy, I was just staring at the clock. It's like, there's 5 minutes left in this game. I mean, they could be down 10 by the time we get to the 2 minute mark.
Yeah. Well, the only thing that saved Marquette from going down was the fact that St. John's couldn't hit every basket and Marquette was getting rebounds, because there was at least 3 or 4 minutes of game time there where Marquette, you know, on a made St. John's basket was getting pressed and almost invariably inbounded it into one of the corners where they got doubled. Now, to be fair to Marquette, there were at least 3 or 4 instances where, you know, some sort of, you know, criminal charge should have been called, let alone a foul. So that didn't help any, not getting those calls.
But a criminal charge is in a charge that is criminal?
Yes.
Or a charge that you would give to a criminal. It's just funny the way you phrase that. But no, go on.
Yes. So they should have been arrested. Let's put it that way. Yeah. But, you know, be that as it may, it seemed like for 3 or 4 minutes of game time, they just kept doing the same thing and ended up with the same results. They finally switched it up to where they ran into the corners and then inbounded a little longer on the sideline to Hanif, and that seemed to stave off the threat in the last 4 minutes of the game.
Yeah, thankfully they figured it out. And, you know, they got the win, which is the most important thing, and certainly that's what the coaching staff and the players does. Look, they got the win. You mentioned the rebounds. A big day for Henry Ellenson on the boards. 17 rebounds, 16 of them defensive. So obviously he was preventing St. John's from getting too many putbacks, and, you know, offensive rebounding is an area, of course, where, you know, the game can swing. So great effort by Ellenson on the boards. Wasn't his best game offensively, but he did have 14 points. But, you know, people question where, you know, whether or not he's a lottery pick, and I don't know if I want to do that for the third straight show, but that is one thing he does exceptionally well is rebound, and he did it on Sunday.
Yeah, he rebounds, and his outlet passes were very good. He started kind of a secondary break a number of times on his defensive rebounds. One of the things, though, around rebounding for Ellenson specifically, but the team generally, they did well on the defensive end, but four offensive rebounds for the entire game, it is just a major weakness for this team that they cannot seem to get their own misses, which results in one and done trips, and that's just not going to cut it. And you would
right.
think if Ellinson is really good as a rebounder, I don't understand why he's unable to corral more rebounds on the offensive end compared to what he's able to do on the defensive end.
That's a good question. It's a fair thing to ask, because on Sunday, it wasn't like it was a big foul trouble day for Fisher or Ellinson, because they were in there.
Well, Fisher got two fouls in the first half and had to sit almost the entire first half again.
Okay, maybe I missed that one then.
Yeah, he got two fouls with like 8 minutes gone and didn't come back till like 3 minutes left in the first half.
I was at the auto dealership for the first half, so I guess I just missed that part. But But your point remains is you would think this team, it's not like this is just a one-time thing. They should be able to be better on the offensive glass. And why doesn't Henry get more offensive or Luke? I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I can break it down and say exactly why the rebounding numbers aren't better for them. Maybe sometime if they're just not ready, somebody takes a shot way too early in the shot clock and they're just not in position. Or, especially if Henry's taking a three-pointer, he's not going to be in a position for an offensive rebound. Those are two things I could throw out. But as far as consistently getting beat on the offensive glass, I really not sure I have an answer there.
Well, the only thing that I wonder is if strategically if Wojo doesn't have them bailing out of the offensive end and getting back on defense right away. To try and prevent any fast breaks, or because it seems to be a consistent issue with not a lot of offensive rebounds. So that's the only thing I can think of, other than they just can't get in position and fight for the ball on the offensive end, which you would hope is not true, but who knows?
Yeah, well, it's something that's going to have to change quickly because, I don't want to harp. I hate to harp on it too much, but I feel like it's important to break down is what happened on Wednesday, where the DePaul game essentially felt like the season ended to me.
I think it actually did, to be honest.
I mean, the thing is, Marquette has a very thin postseason resume as it is. And then when you drop a game at home to DePaul, a team that theoretically you are significantly better than talent-wise – it's just such a crushing blow to your tournament resume or NIT resume that you kind of wonder who in this conference can they beat, and it's not like beating St. John's, while it was on the road, really gives me a lot of confidence going forward with this team, because they've got 10 really tough games coming up and Stetson, which I really don't want to talk about too much. But what we saw on Wednesday was just so disheartening, and boy, the fan base erupted on Twitter, some rightfully so, some maybe went a little overboard with it, but that loss to DePaul was really sickening, and I guess the team got over it quickly, maybe the fans haven't gotten over it, but the question remains is, when your weaknesses are exposed against a team like DePaul, it's like how many more wins in the Big East can this team really get?
Right. Well, one of the things, and I was trying to find the specific tweets from Anonymous Eagle, but he is somewhat of a prolific tweeter, and I was unable to find it specifically. But he, the first half offensively was so bad that Marquette, I don't remember what the specific numbers were, but that Marquette had an offensive efficiency, effective field goal percentage, I think is what it was, of 71%, which is their highest of the season in the second half, and still lost by one. They had tremendous offensive output in the second half against DePaul and still lost that game. That's how far they kind of put themselves in the hole against DePaul. And I think the frustrating thing, obviously the loss matters and what it does to your tournament hopes. But what the loss does more than anything, or the way they played more than anything, is just the apparent lack of progress with this team over this season. The team seems, and we saw it again in St. John's, 22 turnovers today, a bunch of turnovers against DePaul. The team seems to be falling into those old bad habits of taking rush shots, turning the ball over, an inability to get the ball into the post where we can be effective with it. Pick and roll defense was a disaster again against DePaul. You saw Luke Fisher get lost on the man on the switch with Billy Garrett for the game-winning shot. And if you're going to foul, foul hard, but that's a whole other thing. It's just a lot of the same things over and over again, which you're supposed to be improving at this point in the season.
Yeah, and you really, and that was just another game. To me, Luke Fisher is probably the most valuable player on the team, isn't he? Because when he's on the floor and can play the number of minutes Wojo wants him to, the team is much more competitive. And when he's not in the game and when he has to sit early, there's just an element missing on both ends of the floor, especially offensively, especially if Henry Ellenson has to play in the post, which is not his strength. It just really hurts the team overall. So, yeah, when Luke is out in foul trouble is a big negative, and it certainly was in the DePaul game when he only got 21 minutes. And, again, Marquette was crushed on the offensive glass. They only had 6 offensive rebounds. DePaul had 17. But, yeah, if I could pick out one thing, but it's the lack of Marquette taking advantage of its height. And part of that is when Luke Fisher's in foul trouble and he's out of the game. Another part is Henry Ellenson kind of he does struggle as a post player. I mean, if he's trying to back a guy down and try to put a post move on a guy, he really doesn't convert offensively in that situation very often. And of course, the offensive rebounds are pretty bad as well. And, again, when both – Fisher, when you don't have both Fisher and Ellenson in there, those numbers are going to be bad. And even when they both are together in there, the numbers aren't all that good. So,
yeah, I think
a huge concern.
You're right, and I think it really exposed that we continue to not have. I wouldn't even go as far as to say average point guard play. I mean, that's really the glaring weakness. That's where a lot of the turnovers are. We saw it today in the St. John's game, and I thought the announcers were a little harsh in calling it out, but like Tracy Carter had struggles feeding the post and turned it over 2 or 3 times trying to get into the post. If Luke Fisher is going to be in the game and be a post-up player and we can't get him the ball, I don't really know what we can do effectively with that. But on the other point I did want to make before I forget is there was a little bit of positive in that 2 games in a row, it should be called out, Dwayne Wilson has showed up and played quite well.
Yeah, as for all, we did call him out last week on this podcast, wondering if he is in a sophomore slump, and he did play much better in both of those games. Despite the loss, he played pretty well in the DePaul game. He was the high scorer by far. He had 19 points, and he played 34 minutes coming off the bench. He shot the ball very well. 7 of 10 from the floor, 3 of 5 from 3, hit both of his free throws. So 2 good games for Dwayne Wilson. That is a positive you can take away from this week. Hopefully that trend continues for him. But getting back to the point guard play, Phil, what do you think of what appears to be Wojo getting away from Tracy Carter at the point guard spot? Took him out of the starting lineup this week, which was, you know, a little curious to me because in the DePaul game he only played 13 minutes. And so while the turnovers were down, you know, in that regard, because he's not out there, you know, he is the only true point guard on the team. And, you know, Hanif Cheatham struggles as a point guard he had 4 turnovers in the DePaul game. Dwayne Wilson, even though he shot the ball well, you know, he wasn't really playing the point very much. He was still playing off the ball. So, like, what do you think of what appears to be stepping away from Tracy Carter a little bit as the point guard?
Well, I think his performance kind of reflects the requirement. I mean, it's not good. It's bad that he has to make that choice, but I think it probably makes sense given Tracy Carter's performance. The only reason he got 17 minutes today, I think, was because they were having such a problem with the press break that they needed to inbound it to Tracy, who was seemingly the only ball handler that could reliably break the press one-on-one.
Right.
So he's having trouble with his post-entry passes. He's not really scoring, and he's committing a lot of fouls on the defensive end. Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play? It's just tough to feed him minutes, and you need to feed him minutes. So it's one of these things. I don't fault Wojo for that decision, but I don't know that he has any other choice because Tracy just hasn't delivered the last probably 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's the frustrating thing. It's not like you can go pick up a free agent to play point guard the rest of the season. I mean, this is the team. So I mean, you're going to deal with turnovers no matter who you have out there at the point guard spot. And I guess the biggest positive is Cheatham because he actually is a pretty good offensive player. If you take out the turnovers, you just got to take the good with the bad there. Say, look, Cheatham's been great when he's on the floor. It's just, you know, when he has to play the point, you're gonna have to deal with all those turnovers. So I guess that's the answer for now. Hopefully things may be a little better next year when you have Rousey as a point guard on the roster, but that doesn't help you this year. So I guess that's kind of the direction he is going, and I can't say I necessarily argue with it. But it's not like Tracy's not going to play at all. I mean, he's still going to be out there if you want to give him a go and see if he can, you know, give you 10 or 15 minutes and keep the turnovers down. But I guess that's what we saw today. You know, last week on the show, Phil, we talked about how we wanted to see a little more of Wally Ellinson, and looked like Wojo took that to an extreme and started him against DePaul. Which, again, I was all in favor of Wally playing more. And the thing is, I guess as the game went along, he played less. But I think, unfortunately, he didn't get much out of Wally this week. 12 minutes against DePaul, only a turnover to show for it. Other than that, and he had a rebound, a couple rebounds. And then against St. John's, played sparingly today. So I still think Wally Ellinson could be a difference maker. He just, for whatever reason, just wasn't able to get it going this week.
Well, that was one of the interesting things against the DePaul game, is this was the first time under Wojo I could not figure out his substitution pattern. Especially against DePaul, he went kind of crazy and said, hey.
He did kind of go with a whatever.
He decided it was a clearance sale. All players must go. And everyone came off the bench. Sakar got minutes. Matt Helt got minutes. Everybody got minutes, which was kind of surprising, and it was just kind of seemingly haphazard. In his post game, he said, oh, I was looking for a spark. I'm not sure he got the spark he was looking for, but okay, whatever. I'm all for, you know, I it's worth seeing what Sakar can do if we think he can deliver some quality minutes. Though I had a major issue, especially considering the result. Sakar happened to be out in playing at the last possession against DePaul defensively, which I didn't understand, especially when you're going to have Luke Fisher out there as well. That just it seemed like a recipe for disaster. But whatever. It's one of a series of coaching decisions or issues that have popped up in the last couple of weeks that I'm back to being concerned about. Is Wojo a good coach?
Yeah, you know, the thing about Sakar, that was the most minutes he had seen in a game since the main game on December 5th. He had played a couple garbage time minutes against Chicago State and Presbyterian and Seton Hall. I was beginning to wonder if Sakar was eligible for a redshirt. We hadn't seen him in so long, but I guess he had played too many games to get that. But back to your question, your comment about Wojo. I mean, yeah, you know, whenever you have a catastrophic loss, the questions about the coaching staff are going to come up. And you know, we've talked about the lack of progress with the team, and seemingly lack of development. And we talk, and as much as we want to be in denial about it, this is still a young team that is learning, and that includes the coaching staff. I still think Wojo is learning as a head coach. He still wants to be a man-to-man team, even though his personnel don't really reflect that. Like they are better in a zone. And My thing is, yeah, the results have been a little disappointing. The results have been fairly disappointing, to be honest with you. But am I on the fire the guy train? No, definitely not. But certainly the team has been trending down lately. And mainly because when you look at it, Marquette, since the new Big East began, is really one of the worst programs. DePaul finished ahead of Marquette last year, and it's going to be neck and neck between the two of them this year, because DePaul still has two games with St. John's, and they have another game with Marquette at their place. So you don't want to be the coach that falls behind DePaul as a program. So not to say that's necessarily happening. I'm just saying it's kind of out there right now. I am hoping Wojo can continue to evolve as a coach. Be more open to, I guess, adapting to his personnel. And by that, I mean, look, just being to accept, look, we can't play man-to-man. We need to play more zone. And, you know, when you see, you know, we haven't seen the team be as reckless offensively as we have earlier in the season, but we've still seen them be pretty sloppy with the turnovers. And obviously they were not prepared for a full court press today. Or on Sunday against St. John's. So Yeah, there are still questions about Wojo, but in my opinion, there's still plenty of time to answer them. Now, if we go 2 or 3 years without making a tournament, yeah, then I think we'll be really, really down on the guy. But I do think, you know, I certainly understand the questions and disappointment now, but I hope we could still be patient with the guy as he continues to kind of figure this thing out and figure out the team and figure out what he likes to do and what his go-to decisions are as a coach and what's working and what doesn't.
Yeah, I respect and the non-emotional side of me wants to cling to your realistic and reasoned approach to life, like it's a, you know, a life preserver. But what I'm having trouble with is this, barring a miracle, and you'd have to believe this team is capable of going 8-2 the rest of the way in conference play. So barring a miracle or a miraculous conference tournament winning run, this team is not going to the NCAA tournament, which would be the third year in a row. The last year of Buzz, last year under Wojo, and this year under Wojo. So next year would represent the fourth year potentially where we could not go to the conference tournament. The thing that really concerns me is last year we seemed to fade as we played through conference play. That I attributed to injuries. You had Carlino go down with 4 or 5 games with a concussion, some other nagging injuries. And he
had an 8-man roster.
Right, he had an 8-man roster. So I kind of say, okay, that. But this year, again, to me, they seem like they're fading again. And if I look at the roster from a player-by-player perspective, who on the roster do I think is playing at a better level this year than last year? Admittedly, there's a lot of freshmen, but you know, Luke Fisher's playing better. But is that because his shoulder is actually healed? Dwayne Wilson is probably playing at least the level he was last year, maybe a little better. Sandy seemed to regress. Juwan has flashes here and there. And even the freshmen seem to have plateaued a little bit. So that's what I'm struggling with is this team developing throughout the season? The team's clearly better this year than last year. The problem is the entire Big East is better this year than last year. So yeah. we didn't improve relative to the conference.
Yeah, Anonymous Eagle pointed that out. Said this was a bad year to be inexperienced in the Big East. Just because Xavier has one of its strongest teams ever. Villanova is as good as it's ever been. I mean, this was probably Villanova's best team.
I would think so.
Since they went to the Final Four in 2009.
Yep.
The Scotty Reynolds team. Providence, of course. Chris Dunn is probably their best player since I don't know. I mean, he's their best player in a while, and he's delivered. And Butler's been very strong. So it is a bad year to be inexperienced. You know, Wojo isn't a guy to make excuses for his wins and losses. And when he does lose games, he's obviously frustrated and he doesn't make excuses. But I will make these excuses for him. Last year, the excuse was the cupboard was bare. He had, you know, after Burton and Dawson left, he had eight players left, and then he had the injuries. He just didn't have the roster. He didn't have enough players last year. The excuse this year is youth. Even though he doesn't want to make that excuse, the reality is Marquette is one of the youngest teams in the country, and they play like it very frequently. All the turnovers, the undisciplined approach on offense at times, getting lost on defense, these are mistakes of youth. Now, what is the excuse next year? The only excuse I could think of is Ellenson leaves and we weren't able to replace him. Other than that, there really shouldn't be an excuse next year if the team gets worse or kind of remains at this level. So I think next year the heat would really turn up on Wojo, even if Ellenson is gone, presuming you bring back everyone else and there's no unexpected transfers or surprising defections to the pros. You're going to have an experienced team next year. Luke Fisher will be a senior. Juwan Johnson will be a senior. Dwayne Wilson will be in his fourth year on the program as a redshirt junior. Andrew Rousey will be in his fourth year as a college player, his third year as a redshirt junior, his first with Marquette. So there should be – inexperience will not be an excuse for next year's team. So I would say he absolutely has to make the tournament next year, but maybe that's overstating it a little bit. But I would say that would take the heat off if he can break through and make the tournament next year. If he doesn't, then I think the heat really turns up for his fourth season. So we'll just have to kind of see how the team develops. As far as, you know, what you said about development of the players, I would say this. If you mentioned Fisher, maybe his health is part of the reason he's better, but the fact is he is better. I think eventually Luke could be a pro prospect, maybe not necessarily an NBA player, but certainly a guy who plays for money somewhere. Juwan Johnson, I think, is starting to realize his potential, and I am hopeful for a really nice senior year from Juwan Johnson. Dwayne Wilson is still inconsistent at times, as indicated in this podcast. Some weeks we are wondering if he's ever going to have it, and some weeks we are just so high on him and so happy he's a Marquette player. I think eventually Dwayne will hopefully find some consistency. And then, you know, the freshmen, freshmen do tend to hit a wall eventually. That's really not that unusual. I don't know if I can say any freshman has necessarily greatly progressed since the beginning of the season. Maybe Matt Helt. At least because when Matt Helt first showed up, I wasn't sure he was going to see the floor this year.
It was like watching a giraffe walk for the first time.
Yeah. And, you know, he still is a little overwhelmed out there at times, but at least he's a guy you can throw out there for a few minutes when Luke's in foul trouble. So I get what you're saying is that you want to see more, but unfortunately we have to acknowledge that that youth is still holding the team back. It does kind of lead some credibility to something. I think the guys over at Paint Touch have said this, you know, that Henry Ellenson is simultaneously the best and worst thing to happen to Wojo. Well, I wouldn't necessarily say worst is accurate, but there's good and bad when you bring in a guy like Henry Ellenson. The good is obvious. Lottery pick, an instant impact guy, totally changes the way people look at your team. A guy who's going to get a bunch of rebounds, score a bunch of points, and just instantly make you more credible as a team when you've got a player like that on your roster, and hopefully he brings more talented players with him. The bad, of course, is the expectations that come with having a guy who is viewed as a possible one and done, because you're only going to have him for 1 year. And so the idea is, well, I certainly hope we make a run with this guy on campus, or else what was he doing here? Right. And so, so I think that is where a lot of the angst comes from is, well, we have our one and done now, and all these other one and duns, they have big runs. Well, maybe not all of them, but seemingly they all get to the tournament and, you know, have big years, and then they get drafted, or at least they all seem to turn their, you know, give their the programs they go to a nice boost, you know, whether it's Kentucky or Duke or, you know, obviously Kevin Durant was amazing at Texas. Michael Beasley was incredible at Kansas State, and there was a lot, and there's a long list of guys who have had a great run as a one and done player in college. So I think the expectations that came with adding a lottery pick may have been unrealistic for this team, because while maybe some other Marquette teams in the past, had they added a Henry Ellenson, would have really taken a big leap forward, considering how many other freshmen and sophomores are playing on this team, I'm not sure this team was really ready for a run like that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I guess that begs the question, would you have, you know, Henry Ellenson is a talent. There is no doubt about that. But do you think Henry Ellenson is a good fit for Marquette where they are in the program, right? Knowing what we know now, well, if you could trade Henry Ellenson for a player that's probably a four-year player that's going to develop, does you know?
Oh, no. I roll the dice with the one and done every time. You never say no to a good player. Now, I mean, I get what you're saying. Like, would you rather have a guy like, say, Buddy Hield, who may not be much as a freshman but could be an All-American as a senior?
Well, right. And does Henry's skill set and what he's trying to do as, in theory, a one and done, does that fit with the team you have? If you've got a really inexperienced team and you're putting Henry Ellenson in there as well, that's going to need to dominate the ball some and is learning himself, is that an effective team you put together, or are you better off with a slightly shorter, you know, going with, if you didn't have Henry on this team, having a shorter roster, does that help? I mean, it doesn't make things better, I guess is what I'm trying to say. It doesn't make it better, but you're trading this year with reduced expectations for improvement in the future years. Whereas, to your point, I think with Henry coming, it raised the expectations that this year was the year when it probably shouldn't have been.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, but I will still take a one and done anytime I can get him, you know, and just take my chances. Obviously, it didn't translate to a Final Four berth or anything crazy like that for Marquette, but it, you know, I'll take my chances and see if that guy can give me a boost, and if he does give me a huge boost, maybe other big prospects come in behind him, you know, as opposed to a guy who, you know, you're going to have to develop and wait on, which maybe long term he will develop and become a nice player, but give me the instant impact, and hopefully it just raises everyone else in the program, and you know, maybe everyone else hasn't been risen to the level where Henry is, and you know, it hasn't lifted the program to a tournament team necessarily, but I would never say no to a player of Henry Ellenson's talent. If you know, if a guy like that wants to come on in, bring him in, and if he doesn't fit, we'll make him fit. You can always find room in any offense for a player like Henry Ellenson. If your offense does not work with a guy like Ellenson, you have a bad offense, right? You know, you need to make it work. By the way, Henry Ellenson, not the only superstar in this 2015 recruiting class who may be missing the tournament. Ben Simmons is in LSU. They are not currently in the tournament. Malik Newman, who was the top guard in the country, he went to Mississippi State. I think they are like way out of it. And then who's the other one? Stephen Zimmerman, who went to UNLV. He stayed close to home. I mean, they fired their coach for crying out loud. They were so frustrated over there. So it, you know, who knows? We may have all the lottery picks may meet in at the Garden for the NIT Final Four. Maybe we could have that. We'll have a star-studded NIT Final Four of LSU, Marquette, Mississippi State, and UNLV. Maybe we can make that happen. But I will say that's one thing I was noticed when I was looking at recruiting stuff this week. It's like, you know, in 2015 there were a lot of, not necessarily like people completely ignored the blue blood programs, but a lot of guys in the top, you know, 10 to 20 went to, you know, not Duke, Kansas, or Kentucky. Like there was like the ones I mentioned, and then Swanigan went to Purdue, and there were a few others. But where you look at next year, in the top 10, you got 3 going to Duke and 3 going to Kentucky. So it's back to the norm for 2016.
Yeah, it was a weird year, and maybe it speaks to, you know, unless you're like Kentucky where you're reloading with 4, you know, top 50 freshmen, you know, the one and done is not the cure all. A one and done coming into a relatively mature roster, yeah, that can work out. But if you've got a lot of youth, you know, and you've got a one and done coming in, they're not going to solve the problem. And that's just what we've got to accept.
Yeah, like none of them would ever say it publicly, but I wonder if any of those guys, not necessarily Henry, but if any of them want, like, think back about it and wonder, man, maybe I should have gone to one of the big boys because I'm only going to be here a year instead of trying to make history at a program by myself. Again, not necessarily that Henry would be saying that at Marquette, but, you know, if maybe Zimmerman doesn't want to – is rethinking UNLV, or Simmons is thinking, hey, maybe I should have gone to Kentucky, or Malik Newman, he had an offer from Kentucky too. So I wonder if those guys are thinking, you know, maybe trying to carve your own path with an inexperienced team, or, you know, maybe that wasn't the best way to go. But yeah, but I like, again, not necessarily that Henry would be thinking that about Marquette, but at the same time, you know, Marquette benefited from Henry much, I think, more than Henry may have benefited from Marquette, in my opinion, because you love having a guy like that, you know, and it's exciting to have a player of that caliber on your roster. Now we'll see how it all translates to Henry's, you know, draft stock or whatever, and All-American honors or you know, freshman All-American honors, all Big East honors, whatever he may garner at the end of the season. But yeah, like, you know, I have to say Henry's been good, but he has not been, you know, top shelf, you know, world beater one and done type player.
He's not been the type of player you hang your offense or your defense on and let him go to work and let everybody else work off of him. He's somebody that needs to be integrated with the offense, which is not an indictment on his capability because he can be really good. But the pieces I just don't think were quite there either. They didn't develop like we anticipated, or they just didn't turn out the ways we hoped. And, you know, who knows? Maybe Marquette goes on a run, or they can, you know, win the Big East tournament. But as it sits right now, Marquette's just not going to make the tournament. So it's really about players developing for next year at this point.
Yeah, and I think that kind of is the thing. And we'll see. Yeah. You know, I was reading, you know, some of the articles leading up to the St. John's game, and, you know, the team was talking about still wanting to build a tournament resume, and I was like, eeh.
Which tournament?
I know, I'm glad the team thinks that way and not our way of, you know, screw the season. I'm glad they are at least optimistic and going to give it their best down the stretch here. But, you know, after the Stetson joke of a game, I hope we get, 100 people at that game.
Well, I was going to say, on Twitter I posted over under 2,000 people at the game on Wednesday. I'm very seriously considering the under.
Yeah. By the way, Stetson not currently a 300 RPI or 300 KenPom team. They're 299 as we record this on Sunday. So, you know, after we beat them.
Beating them will only bring us down by a couple of pegs.
Yeah. So, thing is, if Stetson plays horribly, then they would probably drop back into the 300s. But that's neither here nor there. But after the Stetson game, KenPom, if you go game by game, projects Marquette to lose every game the rest of the way, which would make me quite sad.
Very. Well, do you think, just spitballing, if Marquette lost all 10 conference games that remain on the schedule, is Wojo's seat hot?
No. I mean, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, like, I would say 5, like, it certainly wouldn't be enough to make a move. I think people would be very disappointed in a 3-13 finish, or 3-15. So, yeah, that would, I mean, no one would be happy about that. Like, gosh, what was Marquette last year? They had more than that last year.
Yeah, they were 6-12.
Did they have? I know they were 4-14 last year. Yeah.
Let's do a little KenPom live research.
Yeah, they were 4-14 last year in the Big East. I was gonna say 6 seems like a lot.
Yeah, 4-14.
Having fewer wins in the Big East, you know, the year with Henry Ellenson would be disastrous. But I would say that people would be very disappointed. I don't think Wojo would be necessarily on a quote-unquote hot seat just yet. But the thing is, you know, realistically speaking, all right, obviously it would be so amazing if Marquette were able to win 8 of their last 10, get a ton of huge wins, and have a, you know, bubble-worthy resume. But realistically speaking, you got to look at those last 10 and hope you can get, say, 4 or 5, because then you would at least be in contention for the NIT, right? You know, because if you lose them all, if you lose them all, you would not even be 500.
Right, so you have to be 500.
Yeah, you got to at least get 2, right? 3? Yeah, you got to get at least 3 to get to 16-15. So you got to get – that would include the Stetson game, though. So you got to get at least 2 in conference play to finish above 500 – and then you would have to get a win in the conference tournament. Otherwise, you're right at 500 if you lose that first game. So, I mean, you got to hope for at least 4 or 5 wins to have it like something that would make you worthy of an NIT selection. I know the team is still thinking NCAAs, and that's great. Shoot for the stars. Hope they prove me wrong and just win them all. But realistically, I'm just hoping they can find 4 wins out of those last 10 in the Big East. And then I think they would be up for some NIT consideration.
Is this the part of the podcast that's supposed to make me feel better?
Yeah, it is.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
That's the best I can do.
I will say this, though. It is absolutely critical that they make the NIT because this is a team with no experience. You got to get experience any way you can. And this team can certainly benefit from additional practices and additional, you know, one and done type games to prepare them for next year.
Yeah, I think they would benefit greatly if they got into the NIT. And who knows, you may not even see Henry Ellenson play that much if they got to the NIT. You know, maybe he might be backing off a little bit. And you're playing guys who are a more part of the future. Again, I'm just assuming that Ellinson's going pro. Not that that's 100% lock, but very likely.
I think it would be silly if he. I'd love for him to come back. That
yeah,
team
selfishly,
would be,
I would love for him to come.
Yeah,
back.
Yeah, that team next year in theory would be a top 10 team. I think.
Yeah, let's not go that far, but they would be very good. I think they'd be very. I don't know if they'd be top 10, but let's just hope for top 10 in the Big East right.
Right.
Now. How about that?
Boy, we set our bars really
that's
high.
That's lower in the bar, but you look at the game by game, and I will say on the first game they could really start. Maybe building some momentum on Saturday against Butler just because there is a noticeable height advantage against Butler. Butler is really one of the smaller teams in the Big East. And again, if you can keep Fisher on the floor with his foul trouble, you would hope that they could take advantage of that height advantage against Butler on Saturday, and maybe you can steal one then, and then maybe you could try to build a little momentum, see how many wins you can get in conference play. And by the way, Butler's going to press, guaranteed.
Yeah, 100%. They would be silly not to. Now, the dose of optimism I would throw out there is the next four conference games. Butler, we haven't played yet, but again, like you pointed out, the pieces are there that there should be some hope around that game that Marquette pull off a win at home. KenPom projects, a 40% chance of a win for Marquette, which is one of the better chances we have through the rest of the season. But after that Butler game, you then have Seton Hall, who we were competitive with for at least a half, but that was the first game of the conference season, and they faded late.
Then the wheels came off.
Yeah, the wheels came off. They've learned better. Xavier, we competed with all the way through, and we played bad, but we competed with.
I'll say this. If Marquette wins 8 of its last 10, that's one I still would have as a loss. I mean,
yeah.
Going to Xavier is going to be a nightmare.
Yes. So, but what I'm saying is if Marquette plays up to its highest level of potential that we've seen, it's not outside the realm of possibility that they could win 2, 3, or 4 of the next 4 conference games because they've been competitive at some point in all of those games with the exception of Butler since we haven't played them. So there's a possibility there, but that's a huge ask for this team to play at its potential consistently, even within a game, let alone across 4 games.
I was going to say, is that optimism I heard here coming from you, Phil? Is that still allowed?
I'm really trying hard. I'm by nature an optimist, and it's really trying to come through all the Eeyore stuff I'm throwing out there.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, to throw some coach speak at everybody, they just have to take it one game at a time. And we'll just see how many wins they have at the end of the road, and we'll see what that's good enough for. Hopefully it's good enough for an NIT berth. And, of course, keep in mind, the bigger goal really should be to have this team playing as well as humanly possible in the first week of March. And if you can pull off a miracle in the Garden, then maybe you've got, and then who knows? Maybe you steal a bid. That is really the goal, is just to take it game by game, see how good you can possibly be the first week of March, and just take your shot. And that may be the only shot they have at it, but you just have to be as good as you can possibly be when the Big East tournament begins in, I guess it's technically the second week of March, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, we're going to have to play some good basketball because with the exception of the one game left against DePaul, every one of our conference games is against a top 50 KenPom team.
Yeah, and then, of course, DePaul is the house of horrors where Marquette never plays well. I think you could assemble a team of, like, Marquette NBA players and pro players. You could bring in Wade Butler, Crowder, and Wesley Matthews, and bring back Vander Blue for good measure, and Devontae Gardner, and you could still send them to DePaul, and they shoot 25%. It would come down to the last play. Just because that's what happens when Marquette goes to DePaul. It doesn't matter who was on the team. So that's always a nightmare game, and I'm not looking forward to it at all, but we'll deal with that when we get to it. The more pressing matter, play Stetson on Wednesday, just win, don't get anybody hurt, and then we'll see what happens the rest of the way. Again, the Butler game, Marquette's going to be an underdog. They're going to be an underdog in every game the rest of, from now until the end of the season, but the possibility of a win against Butler is not necessarily impossible, just because if that is a game, as we've talked about several times before, Phil, if that's one of those games where ideally you can get 30 plus, maybe 35 minutes out of Fisher and Ellinson I think that's a mismatch they can exploit and maybe steal one against Butler. And then, as you said, maybe you get some momentum going after that. Tournament resume, I'm really not caring about. I just want to see how many wins this team can stack up, and we'll look at it in March.
Yeah, like you said, you try and put the Butler game and a win behind you, and just see where the rest of it goes. More than anything, like you said, I've kind of given up on the tournament resume in terms of something I'm worrying about or hoping for. More than anything, I just want to see more consistency. You know, I want to see – maybe it's probably too much to ask for them to play at the level they did against St. John's in the first 4 minutes of the second half, where they went up by 20 and defense and offense was all clicking simultaneously. That may be too much, but I just want to see them play consistently on both sides of the ball. And just kind of drive that, even if they lose, as long as they're consistent and not making silly mistakes. I mean, we're over 60% of the season is gone by now. So, you know, they really aren't truly freshmen anymore. So I'd like to see some of those freshmen mistakes start to find their way out of the game. And that's really what I'm looking for over the next 11 games.
I think that's something we said in the first podcast of the season. How long will freshman mistakes cost this team wins? You know, and we're still seeing it.
Yeah, 64% of the season gone. We're still seeing it.
So, again, it is time for those things to kind of go away, or at least be less of an issue. So we'll see if they're able to iron anything out against the Hatters, and then we'll see what can happen against Butler on Saturday. Going to hope for the best this week, Phil, and I'm just all I would say to the people who have their, you know, torches and pitchforks ready for Wojo, trust the process, lower your expectations just a little bit for this young team, and we'll see how many wins they can get in Big East play, and maybe we'll be pleasantly surprised when it's all over. God, I hope they have more than 4 wins, otherwise I really would hate to be Wojo going into this offseason.
That looks ugly.
Yeah, so let's get to 5 or 6 wins in the conference, and then we'll see what happens from there. But yeah. Anything else to add about this, Phil, before we bury it?
No, I think I've depressed the fan base enough.
Yeah. So again, we're trying to remain optimistic here. So we'll see what they can do against Butler on Saturday. And hey, don't wear a hat against Stetson, right?
Oh God, leave. End the podcast now.
All right, we're done. As always, thanks for listening, everyone. You can catch us on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOF23. Crack Sidewalks would be the team handle. Of course, we post the podcasts on cracksidewalks.com. You can leave your comments there. And we have a Facebook page for Scrambled Eggs. We post the podcasts over there as well. And, of course, they're on iTunes. Phil, let's just try to, you know, reach for some optimism. And if you can't get some optimism, just reach for a beer.
Done and done.
Very good. Until next time, seashells and balloons all.